Listen, the way you sleep is unique to you. And that's why having a Sleep Number smart bed is so crucial. Because you can adapt to your changing needs for just right. Can't wait to nestle into bed luxurious comfort. So whether you need softer or firmer, cooler or warmer, you are never stuck. You can adjust your comfort whenever you like. And it gives you your best night's sleep. Night after night, year after year. I love my smart bed. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. Just 10 numbers apart, but it means the world of difference because I can change my side of the bed to however firm or soft I want. And the same thing for Suze. So why choose a Sleep Number smart bed? Again, so you can sleep just the way you like. The only bed that lets you make each side firmer or softer whenever you like your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number's biggest sale of the year is here. All beds on sale. Up to 50% off the limited edition smart bed. Limited time. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Sleep Number, official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. See store or sleepnumber.com for details.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Watching Travis Hunter go back and forth
live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles
between different positions,
picked off by Travis,
and different jerseys and prices. I've never seen anything like
Hunter. He wanted the ball, and that's why
the Rich Eisen Show.
I want to play both sides
with guest host Tom Pelissero. Today's guests: Browns radio play-by-play voice Andrew Siciliano, NFL on Fox analyst Greg Olson, plus latest news and more. And now, sitting in for Rich, it's Tom Pelissero.
Welcome to another Rich Eisenless edition of the Rich Eisen Show. I am Tom Pelissero, pleased to be here in studio once again with the fellas, with my boys.
Yeah.
What's up, Tommy P?
Mike Del Tufo, TJ Jefferson. Everybody feeling as fresh and well rested today as I am?
I'm so tired.
Took it easy. We had a little night last night, boys.
We did.
That was
drinking
down at the Egyptian Theater.
Yeah, I mean a little bit.
The premiere of America's Team, The Gambler and His Cowboys, the Jerry Jones Netflix documentary. I don't know that I've seen. It's been a while since I saw a grown man cry watching a documentary. I felt like TJ was close.
It was marvelous.
It was.
TJ was close, man.
He was in his feelings. Out of there.
You were weeping?
And I'm like, you know, I was like, that was really good. And
it was
TJ
cool.
Walks out and just looks at you and me, Brockman, and just goes, that was awesome.
It's like the greatest time
of
my life.
It was that.
It was a time warp for you.
The documentary itself is one of the best, just from the little that we've seen.
We watched one episode.
We watched one episode, episode three, and then we saw the first, 6 minutes of the open.
Right.
Look, whether you're a Cowboys fan or not, and you just like good documentaries and you like sports, this thing was, I cannot wait to watch it.
Yeah, that's what I told you. I was like, I don't give a crap about the Cowboys.
And that's not what he said. He used the other word that we got to bleep out.
Not a fan, you know, but I obviously grew up and became a huge sports fan during that era, the early 90s. It was awesome. It was.
Yeah, take his word for it.
It was so good. And it is. I cannot wait to rip through all 8 of these episodes, man. Just even the 6 minute, it was kind of a hype sizzle.
It's a wild open.
It
starts with Jerry. Wild. And talk about the backstory. And then all of a sudden, there's. I'm not going to rattle off the list of things. Let's just say the White House makes an appearance.
Yes, the White House.
And not the one they visited with George H.W.
No. The scissors get a mention.
There's a few scissors.
Everything you're thinking, time. Are they going to talk about this?
Yes, they do.
Right off the bat, go, yeah, this is going to be in there. That's going to be in there. Everything.
And all the key players are involved. Like Irv and Emmett were there last night during the Q&A, but sit down with Troy Aikman, Charles Haley, all the members of the 49ers, Steve Young, Carbon Policy, Jerry Rice, everyone from that era, the early to mid 90s, who played a part in these games, they're in it full on.
A lot of Bill Romanowski.
Anytime you can incorporate Bill Romanowski into anything, there's a level on which the pure insanity of the man, and I say that kindly, comes out in those moments. Because the episode we saw was 1992 NFC Championship game. Like, that That was really it. Yes. It was diving into the whole rivalry between the Cowboys and the 49ers and then hitting rock bottom and coming back up. And this was kind of the this was when they knew that they were going to get over the top. Mm-hmm. And that's the famous game. Alvin Harper goes for the essentially the game ceiling type of a play. And there's a backstory to that. I won't give the spoiler on this one, but Michael Irvin explaining what happened on that play and how Alvin Harper came to be the one who caught the ball.
Which I did not know.
I had never heard that. Never heard that backstory, but that's the famous post-game speech. How about them Cowboys?
It was great.
Ushering in a new age.
And also, Tom, just to interrupt real quick, if you didn't know better when you just sat down, you thought, is this a Niner? I think even Al Michaels might mention it.
Right.
Is this a Niner documentary? Because it was very Niner heavy. It started off
Dwight Clark
leading
the
up to that, the worst play in the history of football, just in my personal opinion, the catch.
Interesting.
and then takes off from there. But
well, also, it kind of set up the whole passing of the torch thing. The Niners, the team of the decade of the 80s, and then they got this rivalry with Dallas that's brewing, and then this 92 championship game kind of ushered in the Cowboy era of the mid-90s.
And there's so many names, too. This is like the nostalgia piece for me, which is like I can see out of nowhere, haven't thought of a name in, a couple of decades, right? And then I just see them lining up for a field goal, and I see a number 6 49ers jersey. I'm like, oh, Mike Kofor. Like, I know that instantly. Why is that? That's in the recesses of my brain somewhere that's blocking the part where it's like, Tom, can you do the dishes today? Sure. And then my wife comes home and the sink is still full. And in my back of my head, it's just going, Mike Kofor was the kicker for the 49ers in the 90s. Like, that's what I have in there. That's what's blocking the synapses for everything else.
I said the exact same thing to TJ. I was like, oh, man, who is the kicker for the Niners? Oh, it had to have been Mike Kofor. And then I'm like, was I right? I didn't look it up. And then he turned around. I saw the back of his jersey. I was like, yep, still got it.
By the way, did you guys talk about this?
No, we didn't.
Because why in the world would both of you within an hour of each other mention Mike Kofor to me independently? Like when you said
you
it,
you mentioned
I was like,
Mike Kofor to him an hour ago?
Yes,
in my head now.
Yes, I mentioned this morning.
It's not even like a name that you would think of, but
it's dudes random players
with these psychological theories of the collective unconscious, where it's basically how do we all know certain things?
Right.
Like how do you know? You see,
because we've been watching clown, sports for a long time.
You see a vampire, right? Not an actual one, but like this. Somebody dressed as a vampire, and they're like, oh, that's scary. Like, why do you think that? And the theory is that psychologically, it's been ingrained over generations. Just like turtles know to swim a certain way, birds migrate. Mm-hmm. There's something in your DNA that's there. And I think that as men that grew up in the 80s and 90s, there is a certain level of remembering sports guy names that is just part of it. And not only that, but thinking that I need to mention this to the other person because he's probably thinking it too.
Right.
You and I separately were thinking all the things in that documentary last night.
Like,
it was an hour-long episode. Kofor. There's them digging up Jerry's thesis at the University of
Arkansas.
Which was crazy. The archives about the future of sports and management that he based his entire career on. It's
in
salesmanship
the 60s.
And it's entertainment. And there's all the Hall of Famers in those games, Irv and Emmett being on stage last night.
Jerry visiting his parents, like resting places
on their ranch in Missouri.
At the ranch, like where his parents are laid.
Jerry firing guns. Jerry talking about oil wells. And you and I walk out of there, and somewhere we both woke up this morning going, Mike Kofor was a pretty good kicker.
Mike Kofor,
I remember having him on my fantasy team in 1993. Like, that's the collective unconscious.
When you said that, I was like, wait, what? How?
Why did Jay Novacek get no love? Like, he had a huge catch in that game.
I didn't even see Jay Novacek. Maybe there's a backstory.
They didn't talk to him.
Novacek's still around. He's always at the games with a cowboy hat.
Yeah, he's still involved.
So the other thing, though, that I walked away with was this. Because we talked about the nostalgia of us remembering this. And this was, that was prime 1990s was like my viewing time through watching the NFL and beginning to know those personalities and understanding the Cowboys dynasty that had come after the 49ers dynasty. And then the way the 49ers interrupted the Cowboys dynasty, which I'm taking a wild guess doesn't get a full episode. 1994 is probably a blip in the 1995 episode of the show.
We're not going to see Steve Young get the monkey off his back.
For the same reason that they went. So we're going to show you the first 6 minutes. Then we're going to skip to episode 3. They're not going to show us the 1989 episode last night, the 1-15 after firing Tom Landry. We're probably just going to jump ahead to the great success, but we have the nostalgia watching it. Mm-hmm. And you walk away from that and just, knowing Jerry Jones, even people who have sparred with Jerry Jones over the years, even people who, question a variety of decisions. You respect the brilliance of the man, the businessman, and how he transformed that and how forward-thinking he was in so many different things. They talked about the licensing deal last night with Nike and the fight that they had with the NFL and him opting out of the group licensing deals and all the different things he's done. But there was a nostalgic aspect to it to me. Even just walking in, you're seeing the Lombardi trophies.
Yep.
And I went up to take a photo one last night, and it was a 1970s Lombardi trophy. And there are whoops and cheers in the audience last night.
That was me. I'm sorry.
you need to keep it down. I saw the ushers come up a couple of times. But you had people literally cheering at these great moments. And then all of a sudden it hit me. I'm going, this was 33 years ago.
Yeah.
We're talking about a Cowboys dynasty that was three decades ago. Half of Cowboys fans, assuming that you've got a younger demographic, weren't alive to experience that part of it. And so Jerry, again, a brilliant man, a brilliant promoter above all else, who had the vision to bring in Jimmy Johnson, to tear the thing down, to have Jimmy, you know, push for the Herschel Walker trade, get all the picks and then the additional picks and everything they did to build it. And then you're in this 30-year window where, as much as Jerry talked about it last night, there's the reason we have the biggest fan base is because not just the people cheering for us, but the people who want to see us get our asses kicked,
yep.
Which is definitely true. But you've had ample fodder, and there have been plenty of times that people have gotten to see the Cowboys get their asses kicked. It has been a long time, not just since they won a Super Bowl, but since they went to an NFC Championship game. You've had three decades since you were even close to attaining that same level.
Yeah, I know this, Tom.
And so it was probably appropriate, not that you needed a reminder, TJ, that the closest we got last night to talking about anything in the past 30 years, there was a full Q&A. Mm-hmm. Al Michaels, who's still unbelievably
just great.
Sharp and brilliant.
95.
Yeah. He's one of the voices of our, of several generations of sports fans. The closest we got to asking or talking about anything since the early 90s was he started to ask a Micah Parsons question while talking about Emmitt Smith, who did hold out in the 1993 season. And then Al kind of stopped himself and was like, we're not talking about that? Okay. Yep. Moving on.
Yeah. Jerry kind of gave him like a weird look, and they all kind of awkwardly laughed. And then Al just like, whoop, took a left turn. Right.
And the big difference is, I mean, they had just won a Super Bowl. Emmitt Smith led the league in rushing in 1992.
Yep.
These Cowboys coming off not the best season. One in which you end up, after several days of meetings and talks with Mike McCarthy, in which it seems like you're planning to bring him back, you never actually get to the point of negotiating a contract because Jerry comes to the conclusion, I'm just not going to be able to offer you the type of contract that you deserve. So Mike's like, okay, I guess we're moving on. You know, Shoddy's in there now, and everything that I've heard about how he's handling everything there amidst the usual levels of Cowboys drama has been really good, you know, in front of and behind the scenes. But we are at a weird point here where, yes, we're going to watch the Cowboys in the kickoff game, Thursday night football. It is now 23 days away. That's how close we are to regular season NFL football, baby. Right now.
Michael Jordan.
Can you remember a year, the Micah Parsons situation aside, where there is less discussion, less consideration of the Cowboys? And I mean that sincerely. Yes, we talk about it on this show because we were at a documentary last night, which was fantastic. But right now, I think objectively, they might be the fourth most interesting team in their division.
Oh.
The Eagles are coming off a Super Bowl win. They are, I don't know what the betting favorite is, and I can't give gambling advice.
And we wouldn't ask you.
But the Eagles have to be among the favorites. And everybody believes they are going to be there at the end.
Yeah,
the Commanders.
It's a three-way tie right now. Eagles, Bills, Ravens are all 7-1.
There you go. The Commanders, with Jaden Daniels and with the oldest roster in the league, we'll call it the most veteran roster in the league, continue to double down. You bring in the Vaughn Millers of the world. You bring back Zach Ertz. You keep Austin Eckler. You hypothetically are going to get something done with Terry McLaurin. And we'll get to all these hold-ins momentarily since we've had some developments since yesterday's show. But the Commanders are a really interesting team right now. And the Giants, who have Russell Wilson there, they do have a talented roster. You do not look at the Giants and go, these guys are, they're just in over their heads. You got Malik Nabers. He's dealing with a toe injury. Didn't practice again today. Yep. So that's going to be one to monitor. That's been ongoing for a while now. But you've got dudes on defense. You got a bunch of pass rushers with Burns and Thibodeau. Now Abdul Carter coming in. You got Jackson Dart, who one of the driving storylines for the season is going to be, how long does Russ get? Are we going to see Jackson Dart at some point? And then you got the Cowboys, who, again, setting aside Micah Parsons and a very strange situation in which not only are they not getting close to a contract extension with one of their best players, they're not even talking. They're not even negotiating. Jerry has not reached out to the agent. As somebody pointed out to me last night, the agent has also not reached out to Jerry. My understanding is the agent, David Bulaguetta, has told the Cowboys multiple times, hey, we're ready. Whenever you guys are ready to talk, to actually negotiate a contract, here we are, and it's not getting done. Set that aside. What is the storyline with the Cowboys? It's George Pickens coming in, and how that's going to work with CD. They're pretty talented at wide receiver with those two guys. It's a good 1-2 punch. Dak coming back from a major injury. Have we talked about Dak as a top 5 quarterback in recent years? Top 10? Is it, you know, you've got some other players on the team, but your offensive line has been banged up through the course of camp. Your running backs, it's kind of, now I think Javonte Williams will have a good year, but it's kind of a mishmash of different guys. Defensively, you're not going to have Diggs early in the season. You're not going to have Overshown early in the season. Who knows how this plays out with Micah? What I'm getting at is, I don't know that you have a storyline for a team that prides itself on being the story all the time, much less do you have a team that anyone's looking at and going, boy, these guys could really make a run. They went 12-5 three straight years, 21, 22, 23. Yeah. I know I don't need to remind you, TJ, where things went last year. But this might be the least expectation, let's put it that way, for a Cowboys team going into a season, which might end up being a good thing. So you got Micah Parsons. That's a hold-in that continues to go on. You have James Cook, who today was back on the field and practicing. I am told no deal done. As I have said many times on this show and elsewhere, they're not far apart, but there is no close. You only have done, to paraphrase Yoda. There is no close. There is only done. And they're not there yet. But now, all right, good faith. James Cook, get on the field. You don't want to negotiate with the guy who's on the field. Fine. I'm on the field now. Let's see if we can get this thing done. Trey Hendrickson, that has been stuck in mud for a while now with the Bengals. You have Terry McLaurin, which is an ongoing situation in Washington. He was standing on the field today, still technically on the PUP list, but there has not been a great deal of traction or seen eye to eye on that matter. And then you got maybe the strangest one of all in Cam Hayward, who literally did this last year.
Yep.
They did a 3-year extension with him. And Cam Hayward spoke yesterday. It was perhaps pushed out there by certain people that he was not fully participating in practice. Here's what Cam Hayward had to say when he talked to reporters about why he has not fully participated in practice once again this year.
Looking for my contract to be addressed. Honestly, looking to be valued. In my eyes, when I look around and, you know, at my position, I think I'm like, 22nd as a D-tech. I'm 36 as a D-lineman. You know, I know what I bring to this team and what I'm capable of on and off the field. And so it's hard for me to, you know, have enough after the year I've had to really justify playing at the number I'm playing at. You know, I understand I signed a contract last year. But to be completely honest with you, when I signed that, I told them, you know, when I have an all-pro year, expect me to come back. You can look at the contract and see what it was, but you know, I think everybody kind of giggled a little bit, but in my heads, I used it as motivation.
Is that something you're willing to miss games over, possibly?
You know, I think there are definitely, you know, options out there that that could reflect that.
So leaving the door open to miss games, again, 1 year after signing a new 3-year contract, after going through the same routine, there is not a team in the league that wants to reopen a contract 2 years in a row. That's why we're in the spot we're in with Terry Hendrickson, because he did an extension 2 off seasons ago. Then last year, you're not going to do my contract. I want to trade. Forget it. I'm coming back. Then this year, hey, if you're not going to trade me, if you're not going to do a contract, do a trade. That's still going on. For Cam Hayward, like, I'll never listen. He's a really smart guy. He's been a good player for a long time. He has been an NFL PA rep. He understands the rules. But he's already made $13 million this year, by the way, based on how the deal was structured. So you've already paid him $13 million this year. Now it's, all right, now I'm going to need more. And one of the complications when you're doing these deals is, well, if you're just looking, yes, at isolation and like cash this year, there's a lot of deals that don't look like they add up. But it's about what was the broader deal? What was the agreement at the time? Saying that people giggled when you said, hey, I'm going to come back again. I doubt Omar Khan, Art Rooney, I doubt giggling was necessarily the response. One of the misunderstood things about the hold-in is it's not a thing. Everybody, I've seen it so many times, people going like, oh, the holdout, nobody wants to hold out, they get fined. You come in, you don't get fined, you just don't have to practice. No, I can't tell you whether Cam Hayward's getting fined, but you can be fined. And there are multiple guys who've been doing these hold-ins this year that are getting fined every single day because they're not on the field. You got a handful of these happening around the league. Juwan Jennings allegedly has a calf. We know he wants a new deal. Maybe that's a sixth one. But you've got a bunch of these. And at some point, what you just heard from Cam Hayward is exactly what you are going to face as a deadline of sorts here, which is if you now go into missing regular season games, not only are your fines going to continue to accrue if you're getting fined, but now you're losing game checks. For Cam Hayward, that's a pretty low number, again, because he already got paid out a bunch of money. But now you're into a completely different territory. You can't just sit out. If you leave camp, they could put you on the reserve did not report list and take you out for the entire season if you don't come back in 5 days. If you're holding in, again, there's all kinds of triggers. You can take away game checks in advance. You can take away a game check in advance for refusing to practice. It's a lever that most teams don't pull because we're just in a different age. Hold-ins weren't a thing 10 years ago. People held out. Now the hold-ins, it's become this thing where initially it was, all right, this is a sign of good faith on both sides. Hey, we understand you don't want to practice till you get a new deal. We'll work on the deal. Once that's done, we'll get you out there. Now it's being used so much more frequently that at some point, the way to change that is some team going, hey, if you're not practicing, we're fining you. And we're going to take away a game check. And we're going to come at you with everything we've got. Until that happens, which is just not something that management generally wants to do in 2025, you're going to continue to have these uncomfortable situations that, in the case of James Cook, Terry McLaurin, Cam Hayward, all in the past 24 hours, are unfolding very publicly and putting the team in the awkward spot of saying, you have a contract, we might agree that you deserve more money, but you are here to play football and we have rights as management. Let's take a quick break here. Andrew Siciliano, Browns play-by-play man, voice of the Browns. He got to call that first Shedeur Sanders start. Also got a new show on Yahoo covering the entire NFL, one of the best in the business. Andrew Siciliano in studio with us. Next, Tom Pelissero in for Rich.
Listen, the way you sleep is unique to you. And that's why having a Sleep Number smart bed is so crucial. Because you can adapt to your changing needs for just right. Can't wait to nestle into bed luxurious comfort. So whether you need softer or firmer, cooler or warmer, you are never stuck. You can adjust your comfort whenever you like. And it gives you your best night's sleep. Night after night, year after year. I love my smart bed. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. Just 10 numbers apart, but it means the world of difference because I can change my side of the bed to however firm or soft I want. And the same thing for Suze. So why choose a Sleep Number smart bed? Again, so you can sleep just the way you like. The only bed that lets you make each side firmer or softer whenever you like your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number's biggest sale of the year is here. All beds on sale, up to 50% off the limited edition smart bed, limited time. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Sleep Number, official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. See store or sleepnumber.com for details.
You buy a pair of socks, that's two socks. You buy a pair of Bombas socks, that's four socks. Because one purchased is one donated. Socks are the number one most requested clothing item in homeless shelters. So when you buy a pair of super comfortable Bombas socks, you're also donating a pair. Bombas customers have powered over 150 million donations. So Bombas would like to thank you 150 million times. But we only have like 30 seconds. Go to bombas.com and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO at checkout.
Well, I mean, and that's why I'm wondering why you would go by the name of Matty Ice, Matt. That's why I'm, I mean, that's a beer infused nickname, and it doesn't fit anymore. So. Would you agree it doesn't fit anymore, Matt?
Are you is the natural coming back, or are we making a push for the natural here?
No, I'm well, I'm pointing out that certain nickname that you've had for a long time just it.
I like beer. Okay, just throw it out there. I do like beer.
Right. So when it comes to it, though, you're not slamming them back, right? Is what you're saying?
No, I guess I'm drinking responsibly.
Okay. Something that would be a natural light of some sort, Matt? What are you drinking?
It's been a long time.
See, you keep making my point. Why won't you take the natural from me, Matt? Why won't you do it? I mean, how many times do I have to ask?
There's just nobody else wants it.
Are you aware I offered it to Stafford, your buddy?
Is that right?
Yes.
He didn't take it either.
Well, I mean, he...
That's a no, Matt.
Hold on a minute. Excuse me. Hold on. I gave him full disclosure that it was a retread and that you had rejected it. Because I know you guys talk. I know you guys are tight, right?
He forgot to mention it to me the last time I saw him.
I can't believe that wasn't top of mind for him. Okay, so just on behalf of all my loved ones who are cringing right now, just tell me to move on, Matt, and I'll move on. Just tell me to move on.
Rich, you got to move on. You got to move on. I love you, but you got to move on.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you so much.
Even if I gave you a T-shirt or anything? All right, Matt, I can take a hint after 9 years or so.
In the studio right now.
We're on the air, guys.
I hadn't seen that before. I was ill prepared for something alive, just flailing around. Tom Pelissero in for Rich today. So much to get into across the NFL. And it would not be a show, at least for the next several weeks here, if we didn't talk about Shedeur Sanders. So let's bring in somebody who was there for the preseason performance that everyone will be talking about. The voice, the Cleveland Browns, our friend Andrew Siciliano.
It's so good to see you.
Hey, great to see you, man.
Good to see you guys.
You're in the other chair now.
It's been a while, man.
It is weird sitting here.
Because that chair is so low?
It is so low. Also, I have the Granger read memorized, and so I kind of wanted to go along with you. Call or click Granger.com.
But I got caught because I always said there was supplies and solutions.
Exactly.
It's now with professional grade products.
Oh, there's new copy.
It's new copy.
I haven't been there in like 3 weeks. Okay.
It's very important, and I tripped up. That's how deep it's embedded. Do you know who the kicker was for the Niners in the 1990s?
I was thinking about that last night because when... We saw the Netflix thing. We were at the premiere. I'm sure you've talked about that already. Mm-hmm. But yes, I was trying to put names and numbers. Like when Michael Irvin said.
Do you have it?
No, I didn't look it up last night. I couldn't remember.
We didn't have
it.
Mike Kofor. We did not have to look it up. We just knew.
Mike Kofor.
It was the main takeaway for me and Brockman last night was we both walked away going, Mike Kofor was a good kicker.
So we didn't sit together. And when Irv said, Michael Irvin, in the documentary said, I came over the middle, it was a bang eight, and I've never been hit that hard in my entire life. And then they show the highlight, but you can't see who it is. It's 28. I'm like, oh, that's Dana Hall. And that was the entire, that was part of the game I was playing. And, and I generally do when you watch old games, do this. Yep. It's like, can I get that number? Can I get that number? Can I get that number?
Because you not only have, well, we all do, which is like the childhood memories.
Sure.
But somehow those names are sticky in your brain from being 10, 12, 15 years old. But then you also did Red Zone for decades. You covered the NFL. You have more names probably stuck up there from just random dudes in the last 10 years. I didn't know everybody from the 90s. I have to imagine you have completely weird running back names that are sometimes bouncing around that when you can't sleep at night, all of a sudden you just... Shout out.
I don't know that I shout out random running back names, but I did while
Keyshawn Vaughn.
I did while doing, that's a good one, the Browns game on Friday. They have a new 35. Tua is his name, former UFL Michigan Panther who only signed 2 weeks ago, who's a great story. He was working at a golf course a couple of weeks ago, and now he's back and running the ball in the National Football League. But he's wearing 35, and I said, well, you know, he's wearing 35, running like Barry Redden. who wore 35 for the Browns, I remember, and had a great Thanksgiving Day performance back when I was like 15 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, maybe five people got that. But if you're like a old school Browns fan of my generation, I hope you might have thought, hell yeah, Barry Redden, I remember him.
The other part of my brain that's taken up is when I was on the beat covering like the Vikings and the Packers at various points from 2003 to 2010. And because you're there every day and you remember like the roster churn and some guy who had a number on for like a week. And so now, like, I'll go to a Vikings practice. I still live in Minneapolis. And I'll see some guy run by in 51. I'm like, oh, Lance Johnstone. And then it's like, no, that was 20 plus years ago. And that's definitely not him. But somehow that's the name that appears in my brain.
Yeah. And it's like amazing. Well, on multiple levels that you've covered the league this long. Right. I think I did the math. This is my 30th year somehow.
Wow.
In some way, shape or form. Mm-hmm. Like there are a couple of years you're doing national radio and you're going to the Super Bowl and doing Radio Row. So is that really only covering the league? We'll count that. They're like 3 or 4 years.
The years when I was at like the Eau Claire Leader Telegram and every now and then I'd get to go cover one game. I'm like, yeah, that was a year.
I'm going
to
count that. I had a credential for that
years in there. They were a little fuzzy.
I was going through my phone and I found a couple of weeks ago my credential for my very first regular season game, which was the Bears Cowboys week one Monday night opener at Soldier Field in 1996.
Pre-renovations of Soldier Field at that point.
And I looked at it and I was like, holy bleep, I am old.
I unpacked an entire box of credentials that I had saved going back to like 2003. And it is a frightening experience. Also, the credentials in like 2003, literally just a piece of paper.
Yes.
Now it's like a hologram on a plastic card that cannot be replicated and your face must match the facial recognition technology for you to even get through the gate.
There's a sample of your DNA actually under the laminate as well.
Right. Supposedly, I can just walk up to a stadium and like it'll see me and I can come in. That's apparently, if you're in the system, that's now how it works. The credentials, I think, are just to show people. Mm-hmm. But apparently, if it recognizes your face and you're on the list, you're in.
Correct. And you have
to. You might have nowhere to sit because you didn't tell anyone you were coming.
Right. And they may not have a seat or a flip card for you, but hey, you can get a meal.
Former NFL players still have that, too.
Yes.
You can go and get tickets to any game. Just walk up and get tickets.
I think they deserve them.
I don't know how often that happens. Browns.
Yes, let's get to it.
Number 12.
Yeah, he's good.
Shedeur Sanders.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully that wipes out Josh Gordon, anyone else who was wearing 12, at least for the moment. Are we already to that
point?
You
want to go down
point?
To 12? Yeah, he was all right.
You saw it live. You called it. And you've been around that team throughout training camp here. Shedeur Sanders' opportunity comes in very unusual fashion. It's literally because everyone else is hurt.
Out
except
of necessity.
Joe Flacco, who
correct.
Is 40 and might get hurt at any second. So let's roll Shedeur out there. It looked good. To the eye test. I'm not an expert. We had Chase Daniel on yesterday breaking down the X's and O's. He went here to here and this read. I just know watching it, the stuff you heard, the good stuff about Shedeur Sanders in college, which is he is going to be poised in the pocket. He is going to be very accurate with the football. He's going to be tough when he needs to take a hit. That stuff showed up.
Yeah.
And it didn't look too big for him.
He looked the part, and you're right. I mean, that's a great way to say it didn't look too big for him. It looked like the guy we saw at Colorado, which was amazing accuracy. Pretty good pocket presence. We saw the good and the bad. Like, we saw the very subtle movement on that second touchdown to Caden Davis, where let's give credit to an undrafted rookie running back and Amani Marshall from App State, who, you know, crossed the face of the quarterback, got the blitzer, but Shedeur didn't run. That's Chase
Daniel. You're yelling Amani Marshall in your sleep tonight, but go on.
Amani Marshall, 39. But he didn't flee the pocket. He just had the subtle movement, reset the pocket, and threw a dart into the end zone where only his guy can catch it. Shedeur Sanders is the statistically most accurate quarterback in Division I history. Okay? Only 2 years, but those two numbers.
At 70% completion guy.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And you saw that there. He also, we saw some of the bad, and the thing that always people point out at Colorado, and we have seen in the NFL now, is him drifting backwards and kind of running around.
Goes 30 yards backwards.
You can't
and
do that.
The ball,
right? There's a great moment on the sideline there that the Browns caught up with. They're mic'd up, and he was mic'd up, in which he was saying to Myles Garrett on the sideline, like, hey, I would love to do that against you. And he's like, yeah, you're like, you're a nice kid. Don't do that to me, basically. You don't need that from me. I'm coming after you. Right. They've tried to coach that out of him. You saw that in the game, but you saw a guy that looked the part. The moment was not too big for him. And to be fair, he hadn't gotten a lot of reps. He is fourth on the depth chart. for a reason. He was the fifth round pick. Fifth round picks don't start in the NFL. Russell Wilson's a third round pick. People point to Dak Prescott, but Dak Prescott, that was out of necessity.
Tony Romo was hurt. Brock Purdy started because Jimmy Garoppolo was hurt.
Exactly. You go back to the Bucks in the 70s, the expansion Bengals in the 60s. That's the last time a quarterback drafted in 6 or 7 or 8 ever got to play. When he was given the opportunity, which is all you can ask for, he nailed it, and this week will be fascinating.
And so if you're Kevin Stefanski, and again, you're around that team all the time, like you know the dynamics. My understanding through the offseason was they truly wanted to watch all these guys. Is it probably Flacco? Maybe.
Yeah,
but
probably.
To get the credibility in your locker room, if somebody else outplays him, you start the guy who's going to give you the best chance. But it was going to be hard for both Shadur or Dylan Gabriel to learn an NFL offense. They both had a long way to go in terms of that. How realistic is it here? Again, if Shadur continues this over, and we'll see how they handle the joint practices in the game this week, how realistic is it to say they give actual consideration to starting Shadur?
I think it is, and let's not aggregate this or clickbait this. I think it is unrealistic. If you look at the Browns' schedule, it's home against Joe Burrow, on the road against Lamar Jackson, home against Jordan Love, on the road against Jared Goff, then home game in London against the Vikings, a well-rested Vikings team that would have played the week before
Dublin.
Then no bye, and you come home on the road against Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers, and they will be rested because they played week 4 in Dublin and are taking their bye week 5. That's a gauntlet. There's no way you're playing a rookie quarterback right out of the gate. It's just not going to happen. So in my eyes, it was always either Pickett or Flacco, Flacco or Pickett. And right now, Kenny Pickett, we'll see what he can do in Philadelphia, just isn't ready for 11-on-11.
Which, so if you're not ready for 11-on-11 on August 12th,
correct.
What are the odds that you are going to be able to close the gap and be on the field? Dylan Gabriel also, he returned to practice yesterday through camp. Like, if you were, again, comparing can be difficult because everybody's out there. Some are against the 2, some against the 3. Sure. But Dylan Gabriel versus Shadur Sanders, what did you see?
It's a hard comparison to make because of what you just laid out. Dylan Gabriel is getting far more opportunities, at least through the first couple of weeks, than Shadur Sanders. He was, if you want to pay any attention to preseason, preseason game packet depth charts, which you should not, right? You know,
but
this.
It's so fun.
PR makes them. Like, we've had
It says about the starting quarterback. Right, like, let's tweet that 75 times.
Fun fact, I'm doing Kevin Stefanski's pre-game interview last Friday. And we're on tape. This played on the radio. And I said, by the way, like, preseason depth charts, like, who makes those? And he looks over to PR.
Yep.
And he's like, I don't know. Does PR make those?
Every coach blames PR. And in reality, I don't know if that's always the case. I'm not accusing Kevin of anything. I'm just saying, I don't know if that's always the case.
But there was this thing yesterday. Well, the week 2 depth chart is out. Nothing has changed. Can you remember, in all your years covering the league, when a preseason depth chart in the game book or the packet changed? It's not a horse race in August. Coaches don't want to tell you anything. They're not changing anything. Look at the reps.
The only time is if you name a starter at a position,
correct.
They might move it.
It doesn't matter. Anyway, back to your question. Dylan Gabriel, much like Shadur, has had good days and bad. He's had more opportunities with ones and twos to have good days. I was not at practice yesterday. I will be there for the joint practice tomorrow in Philly. From everything I heard, Dylan Gabriel had a really good day yesterday, but Shadur did as well. So they're both rookies. They're both going to have those moments where you're like, yeah, you can't do that. I'm excited to see what Gabriel can do in a game. And I think we may get that this week because, like I said, Shadur is the most accurate quarterback in D1 history. No one has thrown more touchdowns in D1 history than Dylan Gabriel. He's not a slouch.
Started a lot of games to get there.
He played 6 years.
Highly productive.
Highly productive.
And the way that they looked at him and teams looked at him was just, all right, the upside on him is he's mini Bo Nix.
Yeah.
Same offense, same 60-plus starts, tons of touchdown passes, plays similarly. He's just small. He's short.
Yeah.
Not small. He's more thickly built, but he is short.
He was standing next to Bryce Young in the joint practice in Carolina last week, just, you know, in between periods, and they were talking. And they are similar in height, but Gabriel is
lower body
thicker.
Is
bigger, he's thicker. Built. Bryce is slight. Now, Dylan is not Baker Mayfield, who's, you know, a brick, you know, what house.
Right.
Yeah.
And Baker wears like the gigantic rib pads that make him look even bigger than he actually is. Like he is absolutely
he's a square quarterback when you're standing next to him.
Do we see 15 in the preseason? Do we see Flacco?
I don't think so. I'd be surprised. So let's go back. So the third preseason game next week is in Cleveland, and it's the Rams coming to town. Sean McVay is not going to play anybody. If Sean had his choice, he wouldn't even put his first team on the plane.
Right.
Right. Like, why do I want their back to lock up? Forget about Matthew Stafford. He doesn't want anyone on a cross-country flight that isn't going to play the game.
Matthew Stafford wakes up and his back is locked up right now.
Yes, it is. We're getting old. I get it. I'd be surprised if Flacco plays in the preseason.
Here's the other dynamic here, and there's two parts to this. One, when we're talking about playing a rookie quarterback, part of the issue, besides the fact that these guys have so much to learn and there is that curve, is also if you do start the rookie, and then he struggles against that gauntlet that you talked about early in the schedule. Now you have to pull him.
Yeah.
And most of those stories don't end up like Bryce Young, where 8 weeks later, 10 weeks later, Andy Dalton's in a car wreck, and Bryce Young, who actually matured and led through his benching, gets back out there and plays a lot better. Yeah. Most of the time it's, well, that's it. You kind of gave up on him now, and then what does that do to the dynamic? Flip side of it, if you're putting Joe Flacco out there, and things don't look good, even in a preseason game. All right, let's get him out one series, get his feet wet. And that series just isn't very good because it's preseason football and you're not game planning and you're just kind of throwing whatever out there and it's not good. And then Shador comes in and lights it up against the twos and the threes. It's just going to make this entire megaphone louder that we're talking about, keeping Flacco away until you get to the real games. There is a strategy that's potentially involved in that, too.
Yeah, there is. And the hype train has left the station. I kind of feel... 100%. Do you sense a Tebow vibe?
Literally talked about that on the show yesterday.
Yeah, okay.
This is the closest thing.
So it's not just me.
Tebow was a first-round pick, and they traded up to get him, and it was Josh McDaniels hugging everybody. And like it was its own story, but... there was that effect where I don't remember seeing another preseason game. You were on the broadcast. I was watching it. And every time Shador completed a pass, they would cut away in Charlotte to fans wearing Shador's jersey and celebrating.
Tom, we're on
I don't
the bus.
Remember that for anyone besides Tebow.
Sorry, I cut you off. We're on the bus going to the game, and I pull up my ticketing app, right? And I'm like, all right, let's see what it is. Now, a lot of this is price gouging, people trying to get away with, hey, we'll put them up there high. Chris and I go through this all the time when we try to sell our tickets, right? It's like, how high do you put them? And like, what's the sweet spot? Let's see what I can get, right? Lower deck seats 2 hours before the game. We're going for like $300.
For a preseason game?
For a preseason game.
Yeah.
2.5 million people watched something other than the Hall of Fame game in the preseason. That is absurd. But with the Tebow thing, I almost feel like there's a Russian bot army out there. And I don't think there is. I'm not saying that. But you can just
they're out
say...
there. I don't know if they're focused on Shador.
You can say his name and the slings and arrows because people are going to bring their own opinion and they're going to attack you regardless of what you say. You can heap praise on the kid and they're still going to come after you. It's just, I've never seen anything like it other than Tebow.
I guess the only other one that would be similar, I would still say like the most, like the world's colliding, viral moments colliding was the 2014 preseason, I believe it was. Michael Sam sacked Johnny Manziel and did the money sign. I was like, this is everything all at once right here.
I called that game too.
There you go.
Rams preseason
Manziel,
TV.
But even Manziel was, there was a lot of hype around him. But I mean, that was another Cleveland guy.
Yep.
It wasn't this. And maybe that's because of the fact that he went in the fifth round. The fact that you had everything surrounding the draft. We got to take a break. Can you hang? I wasted a lot of your time talking about old running backs from the 80s.
Barry Redden.
DJ Dozier.
That's what DJ, I'm gonna do. 42.
I'm gonna wake up 42.
Penn State.
Kevin Mack.
And right there.
34.
That's why I forgot to close the garage door when I left 44. Home to come out here. All right. More with Andrew Siciliano coming up in just a little bit.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. When you visit the doctor, you probably hand over your insurance, your ID, and contact details. It's just one of the many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose it, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show. Tom Pelissero in for Rich. Andrew Siciliano continuing to hang out with us right here. Not only the Voice of the Browns, but you have a new show that, based on the number of logos I saw in the promo graphic,
Were there a lot of logos?
It appears to be on everywhere. Look at this. We've got inside coverage,
the YouTubes.
Yahoo, YouTube, that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, that, I believe.
Those are the two standard Spotify, the two standard podcast platform logos there.
Monday through Thursday, 6:30 Eastern. Tell me about it.
Does it look like they put like eye black? Do I have black eye? Like, I don't know. No, that's a weird
that's
look.
That's what you
that
look
they,
like now, Andrew.
No. I guess so. Anyway, that's an old photo. Yeah, I'm excited. So it's
congrats, man.
New project on Yahoo, 6:30 Eastern time, live on YouTube. All their great reporters, Jory Epstein and Charles Robinson and Frank Schwab and you know, other guys like Nate Tice, who's amazing, Frank Harmon, throw them all together. And going live on the YouTubes at night, 6:30.
Sensational.
Yeah.
3:30 Pacific.
Right.
You're knocking off in time for happy hour.
Yeah.
It's tremendous.
Love it. 3:30 Pacific. And that's fun. And also doing the Hard Knocks podcast as well. The official Hard Knocks podcast. We episode 2 is dropping tonight on HBO Max at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And had Ryan Fitzpatrick on the first one. On this one, I have Pat Harris, who is now directing Hard Knocks this year. He has been one of the directors for the last decade. He has amazing old Hard Knocks stories. But what was cool is they gave him the job this year, and they said, hey, you're going to direct Hard Knocks. Okay, cool. And then they found out it was the Bills. He is from Rochester. He could ride his bike to St. John Fisher, played high school quarterback right up the road. Imagine like you being like, you got to cover the Vikings. That was amazing, right? I got to do the Browns here. But like saying, hey, you want to produce or direct Hard Knocks with the Vikings. And that's what he gets to do with his hometown team. Pretty
cool. It does seem, and I know this to be the case, they definitely don't want to go leaning into news. I don't think we're going to see cuts. We are getting, you know, a taste of the people. It seems like more than anything, right? That's the focus so far, at least in episode one.
And in episode two, you see more of that, a lot of backstories, but you also do see some conflict because now there is some conflict, obviously, and maybe a resolution.
Is James Cook acknowledged? Because I don't think his name was even mentioned in the first episode.
It is acknowledged in this episode.
It is.
Yes.
We're covering it.
Yes. I don't want to spill the entire episode, but yes, absolutely.
That's going to be awkward if they get a deal done today. It's back on the practice field. That's going to be some quick late editing. I mean, old school Hard Knocks, right?
9 p.m. Eastern time.
9 p.m. Eastern tonight. And then the podcast drops immediately
Podcast
after.
Will drop, I believe, audio afterwards and then video the next day.
Got it.
Yeah. So excited for that as well.
Who else is on that podcast?
Just me.
And
me and whomever we have as a guest.
Yes.
Yeah, so last week, Ryan Fitzpatrick was Bill's legend. Like, he's played for 9 teams, but, like, in his heart, he's kind of a Buffalo Bill. Still showing up shirtless on the field, and he's amazing. And then Pat Harris, and then a special guest next week as well.
I was going to say, speaking of shirtless, I figured Deion Dawkins, just anything surrounding the Bills, like, he would just show up. It's like, you're not even invited, but Deion Dawkins, he's now on the podcast. Why? I don't know. He called in. And
is he not one of your favorite people?
He is awesome. Every time that he comes on the Insiders, and like, it's always fun. He's such a gregarious dude.
He was one of the like driving forces behind this
new
offensive
award.
Line
That's right.
award. In the first episode, he kind of freaked me out because he has his little daughter in the front seat while he's drifting in like an 80s era BMW. But everyone's okay. Coco's okay. That's his daughter.
She loved it, too.
She loved it.
Welcome back to the radio audience here, the Rich Eisen Show. Andrew Siciliano here with me, Tom Pelissero, in studio right now. Matthew Stafford, as we're speaking here, not on the practice field again. You did their preseason games for years. I know you know a lot of people over there. You've also seen Matthew Stafford pull the, oh, is he not going to make it routine many times, both in training camp and game weeks, and then somehow he's always out there. What is your level of concern if you're a Rams fan or somebody in that building right now about Stafford and his back?
I would say it's a little bit more than it was a few weeks ago. I think that is fair and natural. We're getting closer and closer. We're now officially inside of 4 weeks until game number one. I think that gives you some anxiety. At the same time, it is still 4 weeks, and he is the kind of guy that can roll out of bed without practicing and still go no look 30 yards downfield, cover two hole shot to Puka, and he's going to tap the toes, and he's going to be back, and everyone's going to be happy again.
Right.
He can still do that. I think both can be true. They have one of the better backup quarterback situations in the NFL, and Jimmy Garoppolo, a guy that came this close to winning a Super Bowl. Jimmy can play. At the same time, I don't know. This is going to sound like a shot, but I don't know that they're a Super Bowl contender if they don't have Matthew Stafford. I'll ask you, do you think if Jimmy Garoppolo's got to play the entire season, we're talking about this team in the Super Bowl?
Well, I think that...
I think they're a good team.
In that event...
They're a playoff team.
In the rare events through recent NFL history in which a starting quarterback like that gets injured or misses the season, we have seen teams do aggressive things to find another solution. The Rams did it some years ago, even plucking Baker Mayfield and starting him 3 days later. In this case, there just so happens to be a guy who's currently making $27.5 million to be a backup in Atlanta, who suddenly might have a great deal of value to a Sean McVay-led offense that runs essentially the same scheme that Kirk Cousins came up playing with the Kyle Shanahans of the world, and then also played in with Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota. So this would be, as much as, and I know I've made this point on the show before, I don't know that Kirk would accept a trade just anywhere. You know, somebody who has no connection to him, you know, I don't even want to say a name and jinx somebody, but some quarterback goes down, it's like a totally different offense. He might go, I'm good. My family's here. I'm making a ton of money to not play football. Like, I'll stay. The Rams open up. I would think Kirk Cousins would be pretty excited about that opportunity.
I would ask aloud, is Kirk Cousins coming off an Achilles, now 2 years removed, that much of an upgrade over Jimmy Garoppolo?
The history would say Jimmy Garoppolo is not starting 17 games for you regardless.
Correct. And then
he's
Stetson
probably
Bennett
not making
would be
it
your backup
the entire season. And Stetson Bennett played a lot of good college football, has not really played NFL football, and missed his entire rookie season, is now one step away.
Correct. Yeah, I don't know that they would feel entirely comfortable, despite Stetson's good performance this weekend. I don't know that they'd feel entirely comfortable as him as the number two. I think Jimmy Garoppolo is good. I also think there's a part of Sean McVay. I mean, of course, Jimmy Garoppolo is good. There's a part of Sean McVay that kind of wants to, not wants to. He doesn't want to be forced into this situation, but he would embrace the challenge of proving that he can go win a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo. Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%.
100%.
A very friendly Kyle-Sean rivalry.
You
no
know
doubt.
What I'm getting
yes,
at here.
Yes, absolutely.
At the same time, I think they're crossing their fingers and holding their breath that Matthew's back is going to feel okay. Look, he had that trailer. You saw that trailer
Put
that
photo up real quick.
What do we
Does
got?
It not look like Jimmy Garoppolo has dreadlocks in this photo? Can we pull that back, the Jimmy Garoppolo photo?
He has dreads?
Back here. Yeah, look, right there. Does it not look like windblown hair is coming?
Oh,
like
because got is a that new, Devontae behind
he's
him?
He's got a new look.
Yeah.
Right? Sorry.
I just
there.
Got lost in his eyes. Sorry.
You got lost?
But Andrew looks like they look like they'd be cousins or something.
Someone said that to me once, and
bad.
I'm flattered.
It's there,
to be honest with you, I get the Jake Gyllenhaals a lot better than some of the other horrible things I see on Twitter making
like
comparisons.
If we created a nesting doll situation, you could be like two steps down from Jimmy.
I'm flattered. I don't know what to say. I'm stunned and I'm flattered. Yeah.
You got the new show, Yahoo and YouTube and Spotify and Apple Inside Coverage every Monday through Thursday, live 6:30 Eastern time. What else are you excited to talk about going into the season? You'll be Browns all the time,
sure.
Browns broadcast, Brown podcast. But when you get into the season, you're talking about everything. What are you looking forward to?
Honestly, like looking at the rookies, looking at Cam Ward over the weekend. And I know people go on and on about, well, he's not getting respect. Now, there's a difference between respect and attention. I don't think they're the same thing. I know there's some overlap, certainly. I liked what I saw from Cam Ward. I'm still fascinated by how the Micah Parsons thing is going to shake out. You and I were there last night, and Jerry got kind of needled about it, and he wouldn't go there, which said something.
Al kind of tried to ask the question without asking the question. And even Al Michaels was like, I'm not going to derail this whole thing by doing this right now.
I mean, how is that going
to
play out? And I'm also fascinated by
starters.
The quarterback movement here. You mentioned Kirk Cousins. There are other veteran quarterbacks out there if there is an injury, right? Like the Giants don't need Jameis.
Sure.
They don't need Jameis at all. I love him.
Tannehill's sitting out there. Didn't play last year.
Tannehill's sitting
Carson
out there.
Carson Wentz is hanging around
The
somewhere.
Browns have two veteran quarterbacks.
The Browns have six quarterbacks
they
right now.
They do have six, but they have two at the top there. Veterans.
You're the best.
Likewise.
Thanks for being here,
Andrew.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Goodbye.
A lot more to come.
I am Michael Rosenbaum.
I am Tom Welling.
Welcome to Talkville,
where it's fun to talk about Smallville.
We're going
to
be talking to sometimes guest stars.
Are you liking the direction Lois is going in?
Yeah, because I'm getting more screen time.
It's good.
But mostly it's just me and Tom remembering.
I think we all feel like there was a scene missing here.
You got me, Tom.
Let's revisit it. Let's look at it.
See what we remember.
See what we remember.
I had never been around anything like that before. I mean, it was so fun.
Talkville.
Talkville.
I just had a flashback.
Follow and listen on your favorite platform.
Let's get into it.